Good morning. Live from beautiful downtown Toronto, Blake Murphy. And live from even more beautiful West End Toronto, it's JD Bunkus. And it's the Fan Morning Show. No Eilish Forfar this morning. Skiing. Just lovely skiing for our friend Eilish. Did you see any of her posts? Like, did you see the room that she's posting from on her ski trip and from her chalet?
Yeah, she filled us in as to the means that her friend has.
Yeah.
Really hit home when you see just three mid-20s girls in a place that it looks like Drake would film a winter music video.
Dude, I thought, I know Eilish is really into Succession, but don't get broke trying to replicate some of the scenes, right? She's at a villa. That's what she's doing. She's trying to live Succession after the show. It's incredible.
Four on the floor.
Everything. It was incredible. I halfway expected servers to be walking through the background with those big silver dinner plates, just perusing, just around,
just
ready
wait
and available.
Wait until you see how she summers. Sails out, nails out, bro.
Oh. I believe it. Oh, if we could only live the life of luxury of our friend Eilish Forfar. Again, it's the Fan Morning Show. And like many of you listening to this thing right now, we are working from home again. And Blake is in his apartment. We're getting a look at our coffee mugs again, seeing what the actual setup of our coffee situation is outside of a mug. What do you got?
It's a Haley El Cesar that says, leave me alone.
Yeah, it's a cute cup. I just have very unsexy stock black today. Not overly exciting. We're back at home, and it sucks. We want to be in studio. We want to be with our friends. We want to be with each other. But obviously, anybody that is – well, actually, everybody that's listening to this show is very, very well aware. I was going to say, maybe you're in a cabin in the woods. Maybe you were listening to these shows, and maybe this was your only connection as to what is going on in the world. And let me inform you, it's not great. It's really not great times. We feel like we're tail spinning backwards. If you're somebody who spends some time on the internet, you see a lot of memes about 2022 being 2020 just in redux, that we're back where we started, that it feels like this massive step backwards. And that seems to be hitting people in a completely different way. Where, for me anyways, this hasn't been as fearful, and I don't want to speak for everybody, because I know everyone deals with their own thing, they have their own anxieties about this, different people that they come in contact with within their families, who knows. But it was the novel coronavirus, right, when we were first shut down, and it was, you weren't really sure what was happening. I remember going to my recycling bins and wearing gloves, coming back inside and washing my hands and Lysoling my door, because that was the level of understanding we had. We had this cruise ship where there would be people with COVID stranded on a cruise ship, and you thought, oh my God, it's a boat full of zombies, essentially, that we're letting into the country. Now this is just completely different. There's just a fatigue. There's a level of just sadness to this, where it feels like so many people in this country, especially, and in this province especially, where I think we have almost 90% of adults vaccinated, somewhere around like a pretty close to that number. And yet here we are back at step one, or what feels like phase one. And we're seeing sports delayed again. I think with the NHL, we're at 23 games postponed as of yesterday, with a guarantee of 27 postponements until December 23rd. I guess I just kind of want to start with this, Blake, is just how you're doing, how you're feeling about this in general.
Yeah, it's obviously tough. And just to your point, like, we're at just shy of 90% of the population 12 years and older that have received at least one dose, and 87% that are fully vaccinated. Now, whether the definition of fully vaccinated changes as we see the need for boosters and stuff like that, we'll see. You know, I feel very fortunate. Obviously, I've worked through all of this. I've been healthy through all of this. I've got my booster and only, you know, kicked my butt for a couple hours, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. So I want to preface this all by saying that that on the spectrum of how this could affect someone, I'm on the very, very fortunate end. However, I understand the frustration and the kind of despair. And I think part of it is, you know, when this all first started happening, you know, it was basically framed as, hey, you have to make these sacrifices now for yourself and for others. And if we all pull together and do that, then here is the end in sight. Here is you getting sports back and live music back and family gatherings at the holidays back and stuff like that. So I think that the fact that, you know, not everyone has fallen in lockstep, but like I just said, 90% of the eligible population has at least one dose. That's a pretty good rate, and enough that we can, I think, generally say, hey, most people did their part. So the fact that that was the case and we're now here where, hey, all the things we were supposed to get back and all the things we got a little taste of at the end of summer here, they're gone again. And I would understand if people are feeling a sense of hopelessness a little bit where, okay, it's almost like a reset now. Now we're all waiting on boosters again. Now we're all waiting on new protocols and new levels of clarity from public health officials and from, hey, how do we get rapid tests? How do we, you know, what is going to a game like if you can't eat and drink? And is that like, does that even do anything, or is that just silly? So we're back to this point now of kind of chasing our tails with protocols and our understanding of things. And then I think the even harder part, and this is more of a societal conversation than a sports conversation, is some of the messaging and communication around this is, I think, you know, getting even more polarizing. And I don't mean that in terms of like, hey, people are arguing the science. I just mean some of the coverage of this, which is really necessary because people need the information and we have to keep vulnerable communities safe. Some of it has been such that I think there's a real coverage fatigue and alarm fatigue. And that's something that we as a media maybe need to be careful of these next couple of weeks and months, that, you know, I think there's a risk of tune out here or kind of diminishing returns to the way people are listening to this stuff. And we can't really have that, right? Like, we need to get everyone boosted. We see the early data that is really going to protect people against the most serious illnesses and hospitalizations. We're hearing from public health officials and people on the front lines that hospitals are already overworked and over capacity, and we're back to that having an effect on things like you know, cancer screenings and biopsies and stuff like that. And that's where, you know, you have these kind of ancillary costs of all this thing. So yes, I'm as frustrated as anyone. I'm as exhausted as anyone. Well, not as anyone. I'm sure there are teachers and nurses out there much more exhausted than me. But we all still kind of have to stick to this and keep pulling together, because it's the only, to use an old DeMar DeRozan quote, the only way through it is through it. And we're apparently not through it yet, even though it felt like we were almost through it.
Yeah, I think that's what is especially crushing about all this, is people really have been vigilant. People have been trying. It's one of my, when we talk about media coverage, I know that you and I are both media. We're sports media. It's kind of like we're in the kids' table at the media gathering. There's everyone having their big dinner, and then we get to sit down, and they go, obviously, you're going to need a lot of cranberry sauce, you little
chicken
children.
Fingers for you guys.
Exactly. So this show is not going to be any somewhat political. This show is not going to, I think, try and pretend as though you and I are epidemiologists. I will say that I do agree with you. It seems, I just listen to places like the New York Times that tell you and I the same thing that you just said, which is a booster is good for you. I understand this feeling of just kind of getting stuck in this repetitive cycle of feeling like you just have to go from one vaccine to the next. I understand that a lot of people, especially, being very, very skeptical of big pharma, but it's very clear that if you have your two booster shots if you have your two shots and you end up getting a booster, you have a pretty damn good shot of staying out of the hospital, even with these new variants. That being said, I'm going to stick to sort of the media side of this, because you said about the fatigue. And I think that that's what's really hurting people here, is there has for a long time, in my opinion, been a real, I want to say that, true, like, there's been sensationalizing when it comes to some of this stuff, whether it's models, whether it's pumping out case numbers. There has been a lot of just, this is what's in your face right now, this is the fear that you should have. And it's always frustrated me because, especially in Ontario, you said it, we're close to 90% of people over 12 getting vaccinated. This has been a public that has been very diligent, that has done a very good job, that has been very smart. And oftentimes, people get pandered to. People get scolded as though they're doing something wrong for just trying to live life. And that, I think, is where you really meet an intersection with sports. Because here you have, like you said, especially in a city like Toronto, so much of the reason that you might live here is because you have connections to these events. You have the ability to go down to a game. You have the ability to go to a concert, to a bar, to a different restaurant. It is a little different living here than some other more rural places in Canada. It's not to say it's better. It's just this is different. This is why you pay a higher price for rent. This is why there are more people here. There is a lot to do. And when you start to lose those things, it becomes especially frustrating in a city. I think a lot of us have watched this, and usually sports are an escape. And over the last few years, it has become a space where we're having a lot of very, very important conversations. But now with COVID, it becomes sort of unavoidable. It's this look into what the future is for businesses. It's a future look into what the public is. And it becomes increasingly difficult when you just want to be able to have this one little piece of refuge, and all of a sudden you're watching a Golden State Warriors game and they're playing the Santa Cruz Warriors lineup, and it's unavoidable. You don't have any escapes from it. I don't know where you go. Everyone's already Netflixed out. We've already gone through every single catalog of every single streaming service. At this point, you really wanted to have sports. You want to have that one little piece of your day that you look forward to that is different, that is not COVID-related. And here we are, and sports could not feel less of an escape right now. And I feel for people. I do. I think that if you're you said it. Obviously, there are degrees of, hey, who is going through what right now? But just for everyone who has been hyper-vigilant and just wants to be able to have a bit of an escape and watch sports, this is just very, very different than the first time around, where it felt like we were all banding together and we were all doing this one thing cohesively. And I thought it was going to be this incredible bonding moment for a lot of us in a very polarized society. And now here we are, and everyone's kind of starting to stray with their opinions and the way that they feel about things through this fatigue. And that really does scare the crap out of me, especially the way that we see it in the sporting world.
Yeah, and I don't want to straw man anything and, you know, amplify a small minority or whatever. But, you know, I will say to those people who, you know, maybe don't want to hear this on this show, or they're trying to keep sports separate or whatever, like you mentioned, the number of game cancellations, 27 postponed as of Saturday, 12 more are postponed through the start of Christmas.
That's just the NHL.
Yeah. And then the NBA, they postponed 5 games yesterday, 3 for yesterday, the Raptors game tonight, a game tomorrow. You know, it's like, look, even if you were trying to completely ignore, you're like, hey, I got both my vaxes, I'm boosted, I don't have a vulnerable person in my bubble, I would like to not hear anything more about this. Well, good luck gambling on these sports right now. Good luck picking winners. Good luck, you know, recognizing half the linemen when you fire up the Cleveland Browns game later. So that's an element too, is like, and I think, you know, obviously this was a thing in sports the first time around, but they shut down pretty quick. And then when they relaunched, they were bubbled up. I don't believe there was this level, except for maybe like right before the trade deadline last year in the NBA. I don't believe there was this big an explosion of cases at any point. I remember the NFL rescheduling some games, but certainly not this close to the playoffs. The NBA had a couple postponements, but surely you remember the Raptors playing with half a roster and half a coaching staff. So, you know, and that's the other element of this, is that we're back to sports leagues kind of flying by the seat of their pants, it feels like.
Yes,
and
that's huge.
And I think
there's a lack of clarity as to what is going to happen with the future.
Yeah, and I think that that plays into the point about messaging to the general public, and not that, you know, I think we should be past the point of leaning on sports leagues for guidance in a situation like this. Like we can talk about some of the new NBA rules that came down last night, and I had some texts about this morning from people in the league, and it's like, not to be crass, but it's quite literally, hey, we're going to throw bodies at the problem. Like, you kind of tongue-in-cheek said the Santa Cruz Warriors, but teams are now going to be required to sign one player for every player they have on the COVID list. Up to, like, you can only have one gap. So you have five people on the COVID list, you got to sign four. So basically, we could be in a situation where these are G League games. And you know, from a basketball side, there's a concern of that because, like, last year when you had to do that, you were pulling from a bubbled environment. The G League was playing in a bubble. You're not doing that this time. You're pulling from all over. So I don't know that it's any better. Anyway, all this is to say that there is a lot of confusion around sport. There's a lot of inconsistency. There's a lot of frustration on the team and player and management and agent side. And I think all of that stuff kind of goes hand in hand to the level of general fatigue you're kind of sensing for people.
Well, I want to make this just because we always have to qualify now, because this is sort of the world that we live in. But we're talking about these things through the lens of sports. So I kind of want to get out of the way. I'm sure we will end up saying this again over time. But yes, there are communities who are greatly, like massively more affected than the world of sports, right? You said it at the beginning that for you personally, it is completely different than it is for others. We're very, very lucky. We're very, very fortunate. I would guess that a lot of athletes would echo those same sentiments. But if there's something that should be said about all this, is being able to participate in the things that you are passionate about, and when those things are removed, it can have pretty damaging effects. And it cannot, it's just very difficult to do that for just about everyone. And so we are looking at this through the world of sports. And when we're looking at this all, like, and you talk about fracturing of different opinions or the way that people are going on this thing, again, we're already seeing this throughout different leagues. You have the NFL that has now come out, and their new policy is essentially this. They're going to test vaccinated players and team staffers for coronavirus essentially only when they have symptoms of COVID-19. They have these modifications that they're calling strategic targeted spot testing. So that's for vaccinated players. And those who are unvaccinated will be tested every single day. That approach is very different from the NHL, who has ramped up their COVID protocols and said, we're going to test every single day. We're going to have this now where we don't have cross-border games until, again, I think it's December 23rd, or is it even? No, it's after Christmas, right? See, I'm even confused. There's so many, like, rules and things that we're having to track and follow. They're going to reevaluate.
On the Canadian side for the NHL. Right. There's no border crossing until after Christmas.
Of course. So no border crossing until after Christmas. They're going to reevaluate these rules come January 1st, but I have a hard time believing that things like 50% capacity for sports stadiums is going to change in any way that puts butts back in the seat. If anything, I would guess that there is going to probably be a lessening of crowds rather than there is going to be more people getting put back in these places. You said it before where we're looking at, we used to have this way where it was, hey, well, this is going to be the way out and it's bubbles and this is what the league is going to have to deal with. Now that doesn't seem to be the case. Now this is going to be, well, we've all just kind of got to figure this out. And with the NHL, I think it was kind of interesting seeing the words of Steve Yzerman and the words of Kyle Dubas, where you clearly have an undertone of, hey, we are interested in exploring something like the NFL's model, because I just don't know what the path forward here is under these current guidelines. You have 10% of the NHL right now that has tested positive for coronavirus. That's like over 70 players in a league of 700 have tested positive. If you take a week off, coronavirus isn't going away in a week. It's going to be here a week from now, NHL and NBA. And so I'm very fascinated to see how things work in the NFL, because I actually do think we're going to end up with a two-week sample, a three-week sample ahead of their playoffs that is going to be pretty indicative of what risk tolerance is for leagues and how they're able to operate through this.
Yeah, and the really interesting thing about the changes in NFL protocols is they're using something that I don't think publicly we've had a good idea of its existence or its efficacy. And I guess there's a thing called, you'll see a CT score of 35 or under. That's the cycle threshold, which is basically a way of measuring the viral load and how contagious a player may be. So the NFL is basically saying, hey, you might still test positive, but especially in asymptomatic or more mild cases, you know, we now have the testing capacity to show that you are extremely low risk for transmitting it at this point. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can get back on the field quicker. And I think that's an interesting, obviously you don't want to hotshot something like that. You don't want to rush it, but that's an interesting thing for sports where, you know, some of what Steve Yzerman or Kyle Dubas were saying was, and I'm paraphrasing here, so please don't, you know, you can listen to Kyle Dubas's interview and Steve Yzerman's interview, but they're basically saying, hey, if everyone's asymptomatic or extremely mild and our only risk is transmitting it within the NHL playing community, you know, should we be able to kind of proceed as this pseudo bubble? And I think the onus would be on them to somehow show, hey, there's no public health risk here. Like, our players are staying in their hotels and going to the arena and that's it. And that gets dicey pretty quick, as we saw last time around. But I do think that this new PCR test that gives a CT value is maybe an interesting thing for the NHL and NBA to look at, because the other thing that kind of came out of the weekend, and I don't know how loud it got online, but I certainly had a couple conversations with players and agents and people from teams. There's going to be some pushback at some point from the players unions, that there's a sense that they feel like they're being overtested. Like, the non-symptomatic testing of fully vaccinated players is overdone. And again, huge difference between the risk to spread within an NBA locker room and the public health aspect of this. So, you know, that's on leagues and public health officials to navigate just how much risk there is. But I think you're going to see the players' unions and maybe even the leagues themselves argue that, hey, this is self-contained within our walls, and the evidence is suggesting that these are really low symptomatic or non-symptomatic spread, and, you know, those CT values can help to that effect maybe. Now, having said all of that, like, we talk probabilities on this show a lot about stats and gambling and stuff like that. If you have a 99.9% recovery rate from COVID among professional athletes, say, if every player in every major sport gets COVID at some point, you're going to have multiple deaths. Like, 99.9% is not 100%. It's 1 in 1,000 will not recover from it. So that's the other thing, is the leagues have to decide exactly where the risk tolerance is in terms of very small probabilities that are still greater than zero.
You also have to factor in that players, especially in the NHL, I don't know how exactly it has worked in the NBA, but with revenue sharing with their CBA, they owe owners a lot of money. They
through
need
Astro,
to be able
yeah.
to get, yes, they need to be able to get these games in to ensure that they can continue to get paid. And I would guess that for those players, that outline that you just put out, that they're going to be almost unanimous in their support of getting back on the ice or the playing fields. That if there's one thing you do know about you, most pro athletes, and you got to say most, these guys are rightfully going to feel pretty invincible to this, especially after being vaccinated, especially after having a booster shot, being as healthy as a lot of them are. They're going to want to accept those risks. It's going to come down to, period, what the connections are to the public and what governments view as acceptable risk more so than leagues. Because I would guess that the reason why you're seeing such a different level with the NHL is because of all that cross-border travel, is because of Canada, right? Versus the NFL, which is saying a completely different policy. If you could have government uniformity, my guess is you would see more NFL stuff. That's just what I think is going to be really interesting here, is that's the only plausible path forward that I can see right now. Is you're going to, if you're not going to suspend leagues, or you're not going to shut these things down, you're certainly not going to bubble anymore, right? That's done. I don't see a scenario where you're bubbling out a whole league. I don't
Players
see a scenario where
again.
No, we're not doing the thing where the border has it so that teams go into, oh, well, we're just doing the North Division and we're doing the rest. I cannot foresee that future. It really does feel as though the NHL and the NBA especially have to figure out what it's going to look like in order to get these games done with potentially less testing or more flexibility when it comes to the return of some of these players and these protocols. I don't see what the other option is. I feel as though what this is right now is you're waiting to see how things play out in the NFL, and if it's a disaster, do sports go away again? It feels like that league now is the testing ground for what the future of sports might look like.
Yeah, and you know, it's got to be nice for the NBA and NHL a little bit to have the NFL, where the NFL has they put up very few errors in terms of confusing what this is, right? Like they're straightforward with it. We want to play games and we'll do whatever we can. The NBA and the NHL have to, or feel they have to, dance around the public image aspect of it, even though they feel the same way. So it's yeah, for them it's like, yeah, well, the NFL will test it out, we'll see how it works, and if it doesn't work, they'll be the bad guys, and if it does work, we could just, you know, we can tail that. So there's an element of that. I have trouble seeing it going away again because of the money aspect, because of they've shown that they can do a no fan experience to at least keep the TV revenue coming in. You know, like you said, the escrow amounts that the NHL players owe, and that's there in the NBA, but I think there's more optimism that that'll be made up quickly and made up more in terms of a smoother cap over the next couple years versus the NHL, which has had to entirely flatten the cap. So yeah, this is I mean, it sucks on a lot of fronts. I do think the NFL is an interesting testing ground over the next couple weeks, not only because they're more willing and because they're trying these new protocols, but also these are extremely high leverage games for the NFL, right? Like if the NBA and the NHL, obviously neither of those leagues want to do this, the NBA is going to get those Christmas Day games in no matter what. The NHL can afford a little bit of a break here if they're working under the assumption players are no longer going to the Olympics, because that's a couple weeks for makeup games and stuff like that. But the NFL can't lose these games. The NFL has to. We're 3-4 weeks out from the playoffs. This is the NFL's time, and they're not going to lose. Like what would have to happen for the NFL to lose or bump playoff games? It's hard to even imagine what that would look like. So yeah, the NFL is going to be the testing ground and kind of the leader on what's plausible, because there's the most money at stake and they're the most willing to, you know, kind of navigate those risks.
My hope is that, and this is, again, not being an epidemiologist, my hope is just simply being optimistic that some of the early indications bear out, that this ends up being a less dangerous strain, that this is less likely to put people in the hospital, that people don't end up with vaccine fatigue, that people do end up still continuing to get boosters.
They better.
But that ultimately, yeah, that this is going to be where we end up, is having to accept those risks. And what is okay for us versus how much you're actually risking the public. And making sure that we have a good understanding of these things, but also that the path that we once thought was out of this, which is just purely vaccines, right? That was what it was going to be. The path out is vaccination, vaccination, vaccination. That it has become more complicated than that. And eventually, going back to life is never going to mean going back to 2019, right? But it is going to mean accepting risk tolerance in a different way than we have been over the last year and a half. And that's going to be a really tough situation. I'm definitely not envying the people who have to make these decisions, and these sports leagues who are going to have to deal with some of the optics of it and the challenges that are going to come with it. But boy, oh boy, that's what I feel as though we're hurtling towards, is something closer to an NFL model in the new year. And I hope anyways that ends up being a safe option, that the more we learn about Omicron, which is at this point really nothing, which is why I find it a little difficult to swallow some of the information that ends up coming in. This is one of the, man, if we want to get, somewhat real for a second here. I think one of the biggest issues with something like this, where we've end up so fractured, is you have media a la carte now, where you can almost pick your reality of what you want to hear from your news media. And that ends up with having people go, well, this is what I heard and this is what I heard. And it's, you're being catered to. You're being catered to specifically to what it is that you feel should be the next step in a pandemic. And really, what you feel probably doesn't matter all that much. It just really does feel like there's going to have to need more time. We're going to have to see how things continue to play out. And people are just going to have to be a little bit pissed off and frustrated and upset as that continues to play out.
Yeah, and that frustration can't go as far as, you know, like, you can be frustrated and you can vent, but it can't go as far as not following public health guidelines, right?
Yeah, like, I don't think, like, you're going to have a choice. I know. I don't really think you're going to have too much of a choice.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is like, I can understand too, like, the frustration of, oh, well, we all got vaccinated and now it's still a problem. We got to get boosters, and when does it end and stuff? It's like, yeah, we're playing catch up. It's like you said off the top, it was a novel virus 2 years ago. We're playing catch up, and that's not always going to be the case, but that's the case a lot of the time with this kind of science. And, you know, we still, not everyone gets it, but like, we still get flu shots every year. They're still available for free every year to try to protect against that stuff, and maybe that's what the future looks like. But for right now, it's just kind of keep going the same way we've been going. And I don't know, man. I really hope that this is this turns out to be more of a blip and something we look back on as like, hey, this is when we kind of got a clearer idea of Omicron, and this is when we kind of, as sports leagues, tightened up the protocols and really understood exactly what we have to do to keep players on the floor healthy. And it's not the prelude to another March 11th, 2020.
But dude, this is actually what I think is part of what is most important in these discussions, is acknowledging that there are potential outcomes outside of the greatest disaster, right? Because when we're talking about there being a fatigue, I feel like that is usually the easiest route for media to go, which is, well, this could be the scariest of the scenarios, so be terrified, be deathly afraid that we're going to lose everything. And I do think that leads to two things. One is, I don't know how good it is for people, because again, the scare tactics, especially in Ontario, why are you doing that when 90% of the public is vaccinated? And we've all basically said, we agree. We agree as a province that this is a serious threat that needs to be addressed, and people have been very vigilant. And two, that there needs to at least be acknowledgments of things of how we move forward, because we are going to move forward, right? We're not going to spend the rest of our lives in our apartments. We're not going to shut down all of our businesses. We're not just only going to exist through Amazon and Netflix. So these leagues exploring these things, I actually think is really important. You've seen this with sports before, where people downplay it, people diminish the sporting world, and they say, oh, sports don't matter, and yet here we are, yet again, in a really big moment in time, and sports yet again feel like they're at the forefront. And I really do believe that a lot of these conversations are going to be better understood by the public through sports, which is nuts, which feels unfair to these leagues, right? We're doing this, where we've had real serious discussions about race, sports. That's where these things kind of emanate from. This is where these get amplified. And I do look at this and say, how these leagues conduct themselves, how these leagues decide to proceed forward without complete assurances of safety, are going to be real looks into the future of what it's going to look like for the rest of us with a lot of our other businesses.
Yeah, that's it. And like you said, it's not to go the I think you should leave route. It's not the preference. It's not good behavior that sports is what we turn to.
None of this is good
for all of this. But yeah, I mean, like, look, these are billion-dollar industries, and a lot of people get their solace there. A lot of people, you know, everyone has friends that they're way, way, way more up on their sports news than their world news, right? Like, this is the reality we live in. And yeah, so there comes with that a little bit of responsibility on these leagues to send strong messaging and to, you know, you have a guy like Fred VanVleet come out and clearly frustrated, be like, well, health and safety has to come first. Like, like to understand that and to stay on message with that. But yeah, there's also, they're also kind of, you know, I remember back to coming out of the first really long lockdown, and sports also get to be the kind of beacon of hope of like, hey, here comes normalcy, or this is what a strategy looks like, or this is what, you know, you're pulling, when we talk about first crowds and arenas and stuff, it's like, this is what you're pulling together to get back towards. And obviously, like, we all know we're pulling together to save lives and like protect vulnerable communities and avoid avoidable deaths and things like that. But for the people that, I mean, we all think selfishly, like moment to moment, there's no way around that. And it's like, yeah, sports was one of the big things, sports and music. Those are, and hanging out with your friends and family. Like, those are the things that, that keep you kind of in line and making sure you're up on all this stuff. So that's, yeah, sports carries that burden, but they also get to be that beacon as things return to normal. So here's hoping that, you know, this is an expedited version of 2020, where we're going through all this in like a 2 or 3 week window, yeah, instead of a 6 or 9 month window, whatever it was.
Yeah. This isn't going away.
I'm enjoying doing the show, and I like you, JD. I don't want to do 4 hours every day without sports.
No, I would rather not do that either.
Yeah.
At least the NFL, you know? Look at the NFL go. Just
and,
powering.
Hey, the Raptors are still kind of playing sometimes.
Well, this is a good spot to take a break and come back and talk about it. Once, you know, I feel like once your cat shows up now in the Zoom and is in your lap, that's the, okay,
him?
Of course,
oh,
I have
okay.
eyes.
I didn't know if he was cut off or not.
No, your cat was very visible as you held your tiny little kitten. So let's take a break. Let's come back. And you tell me what I can care about from the Raptors absolutely dominating another G-League team. The Raptors, just in the G-League standings in the NBA, are very good. You
well,
know,
hey,
you
man, what did we just say?
G-League
look
team.
Where the NBA is headed. Your ability to beat G-League teams is about to become very important.
Very important. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 59 of the Fan. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 59 of the Fan. JD Bunkus, Blake Murphy. We got sports over the weekend. Wouldn't know it, but we did. The Raptors played the Santa Cruz Warriors. No Steph, no Draymond, no Wiggins. Ticket prices, they didn't reflect the G League. I had one friend who told me that he bought these tickets well in advance and they were $1,200 for his family. I thought, boy, that's a lot of cash to watch Jonathan Kuminga lose to the Toronto Raptors. I watched the game Friday night with a friend. Oh, sorry, it was Saturday. I watched the game Saturday night with a friend. And as we were watching it, he said to me, I would rather watch the commercials. So it was not exactly the best basketball game. I told you, I don't know what to make of that other than OG all of a sudden just reappeared. It was, man, this injury, we don't know, this injury is very murky, cloudy. And then all of a sudden OG was at a podium and he was playing and it was, hey, don't forget all that. He's fine. He's actually going to run out on the floor, play a ton of minutes, score, what did he have, 20 points? He played a lot, even in a blowout. So what am I supposed to take away from that game? Are we just talking OG today?
Yeah, I mean, OG only actually had 7 points in that game. He struggled. He didn't look
I thought I saw...
You might be looking at the plus minus column.
I definitely am.
Yeah. He was plus 21. That might have been what you saw.
That's 100% what I was looking at.
That's the Raptors came out and the Warriors were starting Chris Chioza, Damian Lee, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Jonathan Kuminga, and Kevon Looney, and the Raptors starters did what you would expect, and they won their minutes by over 20. You know, none of the starters played more than 33 minutes. This was a game they didn't have Pascal Siakam as well. So, yeah, the Raptors did what they're supposed to do in these situations and took care of that. And we've talked a lot about the Raptors being an extremely 500 team. This game, by the way, not only brought them to 14 and 15, it brought their, if we exclude garbage time, they're now exactly an even team in terms of net rating. And they are 16th out of 30 in net rating, offensive rating, and defensive rating. They are the most average team imaginable. They are like not only average, they're average and they're the median in just about everything. It's pretty remarkable just how average they are. And yeah, there's some injury stuff on the Raptors side too, but like, at this point in the season with where we're going and you're playing against, you know, guys like Jeff Doughton is playing 18 minutes for your opponent. Like, you can't cry the injury thing anymore. No one can, really. So you got to take care of those games, but you're not taking a ton from them, I don't think.
Oh, my God. No, to the point where this is our job to watch these games. I could not watch it. I was trying so hard to just – because I had that on, and then the football game started, and it's Patriots-Colts. And I'm watching Patriots-Colts, and I have the Raptors in a blow. That game was over the second they tipped the ball up, right? You just said it. Did you see that Austin Rivers quote where he was talking about the Nets the other day?
No.
Austin Rivers had a quote where he said they had Patty Mills and Blake Griffin. It was hard for me not to say Blake Murphy there, by the way. It took me a second to try to get that out of my mouth. And he said, we didn't know who any of those other guys were. That's an NBA player. Who
How dare
genuinely...
he say that about Big Kess?
Well, yeah, Big Kess is, you and I were completely on the wagon for that guy. But
yeah,
that's how I felt about that Santa Cruz Warriors game. Is so obviously I'm a huge Gary Payton fan. I have a poster in my office here of the glove. His father, Gary Payton II, is in that game. And I went, wow, he really does look like Gary Payton Jr. when there's no Steph, Draymond, and Wiggins around. That was I went, oh, well, he's playing, so he should have a good game. Oh, wait, oh, okay, no, this is what he looks like in a game against NBA players without heavily sheltered starters doing all the dirty work around him.
I mean, you that say just... that. He was probably still their second best player after Kuminga.
Yeah.
He had like Kuminga, 13-9.
I will say this about Kuminga. He has a real just fast twitch, like elite.
Yeah,
oh my God, that guy's first step, first movement is lightning fast.
He's gonna get there, man. Like he's far away now, but you see flashes like that. And like, obviously, you know, he's not gonna hit 4-6 on threes every night. The Raptors did not try particularly hard on defense the whole game. Kuminga had 6 turnovers, but like, man, like, you can, that's a guy that pops when things are looking good. And Groban loves his ladies to pop and loves his lottery picks to pop.
Yeah.
So I want to say something about Gary Payton. And I know nobody cares about other people's bets. But I had a pretty hilarious cover of a bet builder in this one. So I had Damian Lee over 12.5 points.
This is a sicko bet, by the way. This is a
sicko
bet.
It is a sicko bet.
To tell me this is making me feel like I get told I'm a degenerate, and here you are telling me about a prop parlay that you have that includes Damian Lee and Gary Payton
worse.
Jr.
It gets worse.
Okay, continue.
If I'm not going to make money on the G League, guys, what has all this G League work been for?
So, oh, my God. I never even considered that. You better be filling me with these. I need a scouting report on the games that include a ton of G League guys from you.
I told you about Big Kess, man.
Yeah, I know you did. You really did.
So, Damian Lee, a guy I've wrote in a G League feature on before, over 12.5 points. Fred Van Vliet, a guy I've wrote in a G League feature about before, over 16.5 points.
Yes.
Juan Toscano-Anderson, over 15 points, assists, rebounds.
That's sick. I don't even know who that is. So I watched that. Yeah, I watched that first half of that game. I don't even know who Juan Toscano-Anderson is after watching.
That guy?
Scotty Barnes over 25 points, rebounds, assists, and then the last part of it was Gary Payton over 1.5 steals. And I'm sitting there, and there's under a minute to go, and Gary Payton is sitting there with one steal, and I can't turn the game off to go over to the Colts game because I need one more Gary Payton steal, and he gets it with 37 seconds left. He picks off Yuta Watanabe and drives it for a dunk. And oh boy, like, I had to check the box score like 4 or 5 times to like make sure. I'm like, wait, they're going to count that, right? Like, it's not, they're not washing it off the box score because it was too garbage timey. But that was a nice little plus 650 bet builder that. Thank you to the sloppiness of the Raptors' third unit and the hands of Gary Payton Jr., another guy who I've done a G League feature on. So
this
is it. This is my time right now. As much as we don't want any of this stuff to be a part of our day to day, you need those G League player prop bets right here, buddy.
Yes, please. I actually do, because I'm going to need it. So when I'm taking my notes and just scribbling things down, I need to continue to remember that points don't go in the furthest column with OG. But, you know, he is on the floor. And I did have that moment And I didn't ask you to tell me so much off air because I did want you to kind of fill me in as we did with the audience. Do you have any understanding as to how this happened so quickly? What is going on here? What the threat level is to losing Ananobi again? Because I don't know. To me, it just felt, I know that the world of sports is more and more concealing injuries and not being extremely open with it, except for in the NFL. Which we both discussed ad nauseum about the future of that and how it's going to be held when it comes to the gambling world. But I don't know if it was just because I wasn't paying enough attention or I was overwhelmed by other sports news, but it really did feel like OG was on the shelf essentially undetermined amount of time. And then I guess because they're, you know, this isn't baseball, but all of a sudden he's just back on the floor. He's just starting. And yeah, all of a sudden OG's back. No further questions.
Yeah, so part of it was because of the one game getting canceled. They had like an extended, I think they had 3 days between games, and one of those was a non-practice day. And then, so by the third day off, OG was back in practice. And what he said was he had a little bit of a setback. Anything with a hip pointer, the recovery time varies a lot. And he said there was a combination of pain and then just like the movement feeling awkward. Like, so I've never had a hip pointer. Ailish had told us that, like, basically it affects your whole lower half because everything kind of feels out of sorts. So, yeah, it's basically a lot of rest, a lot of patience, and that's more or less what OG said. And then once you're good to go, you're good to go. Now, the bigger question for me is Kem Birch, who they also trotted out there at that practice, and he said, well, I'm still not healthy, but there's nothing we can do surgically because it's a bone bruise, and I'm just going to have to learn to play through it. And I wanted to scream, no, you don't. No, you don't have to learn to play through it. It's not that important a season. It's not that important a moment. Get your mysterious knee injury healed and don't come back and play through it. He was supposed to return tonight. The Raptors don't play anymore. Precious Achiuwa also came back on Saturday as well.
Look good.
So the Raptors trending the right way in that regard. Siakam and Banton were in health and safety protocols. But yeah, I mean, look, if Kem Birch is back and those guys, like, even if they're not out of health and safety protocols, that gives the Raptors 12 healthy bodies, which probably leads the league at this point. So there you go. But yeah, OG, I mean, he played 28 minutes, and I think first game back off an injury like that, that's the most important stat he's going to put up is how many minutes did he play and did he come out of it feeling good?
And plus 21. As I've said, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Plus 21. So,
By the way, do you have anything else on Raptors? Or I have
yeah,
one
I do, actually.
Okay.
Well, I just wanted to say to you, Friday, you weren't on the show, and we really missed you during the Stan Van Gundy interview. I don't know if you got a chance to sort
of
see some
of
the quotes that came out of it.
But, I listened to it.
Oh, okay. Well,
I subscribe
of all,
to the podcast, the Fan Morning Show, wherever I get my podcasts.
Yeah, because if you miss things live, you end up going back. But Stan was, and this makes sense because he was just a coach in the league, but he was just extremely well-versed in the Raptors to the point where I went, because a lot of times when you have NBA generalists, right, people who cover the entire league, I'm not leaning on them to know every little detail about the Toronto Raptors. I'm saying, okay, you know the surface-level conversations. You've got a lot to deal with. Stan knew every little detail about the Raptors' rotation. And
that's how he was as a coach too, right? Is like, yeah, he was like, he knew the scouting report on the 11th man. And when he came in, he was like, okay, go do this to muck that guy up.
So, and because we're close to the break, I'll just sort of save this later. But he did put something interesting in my head, which was simply the idea of the Raptors developing on the fly, that the Scottie Barnes discussion around it is far less than we have made it out to be. And it was sort of this like slap in the face realization moment where I went, that's true. Maybe there's probably a discussion to be had about Scotty getting some more end of game shots or some more responsibilities at the end of games. That's definitely something to me. That was put out there after Fred against the Brooklyn Nets ended up getting a couple of opportunities and Scotty was hot. But that ultimately he is playing a ton of minutes. He has a big role on this team. He does have a lot of freedom in the offense as of right now. The question really is going to come down to Precious Achiuwa, who did come back, and what that split between Precious Achiuwa and Kem Birch looks like, because one of those dudes is already who he is. Kem Birch is not going to develop into something more than what Kem Birch is, but as of right now, I think you and I would both agree when they're both healthy, Kem is the better of the two. in this moment. He is more conducive to winning, whereas Precious, he needs a little bit more seasoning. He needs more minutes. He needs to be with this core more. And watching that center rotation, maybe this is not for you, but for some of the odds, a little bit too dorky on a Raptors team that we've already agreed is very, very mediocre, is basically the pinnacle of mediocrity in the NBA. But that is far more fascinating now to me than it was before the Stan Van Gundy interview. I didn't expect he was going to sell me on a Raptors narrative that I wasn't prepared for, that you have been kind of saying to me over and over. You must be frustrated because you've been saying this to me over and over again about the center battle, and I've kind of been like, yeah, who cares? And then Stan comes on and he parrots what you've been saying, and I go, Blake, did you see what Stan Van Gundy said about the center rotation? I thought that would be fun.
Yeah, and yeah, I mean, that interview was great, and you know, his point about, I mean, it's basically what the Raptors' whole kind of philosophy is like, yeah, we got Scotty Barnes, and that was a 1-year dip, and we think the best way to make Scotty Barnes the best version of him quickly is to have him playing these minutes in a team that's trying to win games, and that's better than, you know, doing the what Jalen Green was doing. Or, I mean, the Pistons aren't winning games. Cade has looked amazing lately, but he's still, you know, I think Stan's point was Barnes's development is easier to carry forward because you're in a more real situation, or a situation that's more going to resemble what things are like when the team is actually good again. So I just want to close this segment. Obviously, 6:30 block is normally where we do the A-list. A-list is off today and tomorrow. So just quickly, no A-list. She didn't send in a remote A-list, but wanted to take a second to give her a shout out because she was part of an historic broadcast on Sunday. It was the first Canadian sports broadcast ever done on TikTok for the PWHPA Dream Gap Tour finale. Her and Faisal did that, and she was terrific. She was awesome. It was one of those ones where it's like, hey, she's great on our show, but you see her do one of these things where you can see her as a person as well, and there's more space for her to kind of, you know, be an expert on hockey. And it's like, oh yeah, we're gonna lose her off this show really quickly. So
I've decided to go in the opposite direction. You want to sandbag her
like she does that?
Yeah like, she was all right. Needs a lot more seasoning on morning radio, I would say, before any type of major moves to any other place. She's just all right, you know. And what kind of dedication do you have if you can do TikToks from a chalet but not the show? We're all working remotely now, right? Like, what, the chalet, they're up and doing stuff at this time? No, she could have at least done the first hour. She could have done the A-list, but no, lack of dedication. There's a lot of different flaws to her game right now that needs to be worked out in the Kings. So I'm going the opposite direction as you. You can gas her up all you want. I think A-list Forfar just okay. That's my take. That's my position. Let's take a break, and let's come back and talk about our NFL winners and losers from the weekend.
You missed a great chance for a segue. Ailish Forfar, loser. More winners and losers after this.
Yeah, there you go.
That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.